Welcome to Exec Insights, conversations about Australian business and the changing world. Part of the changing world, of course, is the rise of digital. We're seeing examples of products and services emerge from new digital platforms. Myself, I've been struck recently by the number of food delivery bikes I see on city and suburban streets, made possible, of course, by platforms such as Uber Eats and Foodora. These are only very visible examples. We know that digital is creating seismic shifts in how businesses create value, and digital will have substantial impact on the future of jobs and work in Australia and globally. In this episode, I speak to Professor Marek Kowalkiewicz, PwC Chair in Digital Economy here at QUT. Marek joined us at QUT from 2 years in Silicon Valley as Senior Director of Products and Innovation for software corporation SAP. A large part of Marek's role is to ensure that Australia is on the front foot in seizing the opportunities in the digital age. He is active in bringing government, corporate, small business and the academic community together to solve problems and develop digital solutions. Last year, Marek wrote 9 Business Bets for Our Emerging Digital Economy for 2016 for the online journal The Conversation. With the benefit of one year of hindsight, our conversation looks at whether these were good predictions, whether the trends have accelerated, and whether other trends have emerged.
Hi, Marek.
Great to see you, Kate.
And see you too. Yeah, so firstly, tell us about your position here at QUT as Chair in Digital Economy. So I understand it's a first for Australia.
That's right, and you could argue it's the first for the world as well. Mm. So we are exploring the digital economy, that set of new phenomena that we all see around us, and really trying to understand. The Chair in Digital Economy is a partnership. Mm-hmm. QUT is one of the partners, not the only one. Well, it's a partnership. There's PwC, there's Queensland Government, and together we form this triangle, if you will, of government, industry, and academia. It's all about exploring what digital economy is, what opportunities and sometimes challenges does it create, and how can organizations capitalize on those opportunities or address the challenges. It's very important for us to make sure that it's a very academically strong work that we're doing here. And at the same time, it's extremely, extremely important for us that whatever we do gets applied or impacts the world.
So as in the trend of university for the real world.
That's right.
Mm. Mm. So it's actually a collaboration among two faculties as well. So it's the Faculty of Business as well as Science and Technology.
Indeed. And we could really dig deeper and even talk about specific schools where we have a School of Information Systems and then School of Management. So those two groups providing various perspectives on the same topic. It's very important because a lot that we do is really operating on this cross-section or in this cross-section of trends in business, technology, as well as social. So often, you know, we go outside of just business and technology, and we also make sure that we take into the account the human factor of everything that's happening.
Yes, very interesting. So I was really interested in what you wrote for The Conversation, which was in January last year, which was 9 Business Bets for Our Emerging Digital Economy for 2016. So right. There were 9 bets. We won't go through all 9, but I'll pull out some of them and we'll just toss around whether we think that trend is still a thing, this bet's still a thing, I'd still put my money on that bet, or perhaps, and what's happened in that area as well, and perhaps if there's some others in 2017 that we should add to that list of 9. Mm. So the first one I picked up was actually your second of the 9 predictions, which was the gig economy is not slowing down. Was that true for 2016?
Absolutely. We are not seeing the gig economy slowing down. In fact, what we're seeing at the moment is that trend maturing. So there are different questions that we're asking these days as opposed to, say, a year and a half ago. And that's and I see it as something very important. But maybe to start with the fact whether it's slowing down or not, I noticed that practically every aspect of our lives there is a gig economy solution to it, right? So just look around, look at the ads on TV, look how you get from A to B, look how you get things done at your house, look how you often for your business hire individuals to perform specific tasks. So it's definitely happening. And now back to my point about maturity, I see more and more questions around things like how about the taxation of gig economy, how about superannuation in gig economy, how about all sorts of aspects that we take for granted in the non-gig economy that now needs to be taken into account in this.
Yes, it does seem to be that the regulatory aspects of it seem to follow the trends. So yeah. We see that there's a rise of, you know, the classical ones like Airbnb or Uber, and then everything about employment law and so forth and taxation seems to follow in their wake. They do tend to sort of go fast and break things, don't they?
And it's absolutely natural, and I see nothing particularly wrong with that. It's the nature of disruption where disruptors are able to be agile and change the market so quickly simply because initially they ignore the limitations that they might have, whether it's, you know, social, legislative and political limitations. Initially they try to ignore them, but at some stage, the moment they, you know, they grow to it, either as a business or as a movement to a certain level, they need to take that into account. I think that 2017 in terms of gig economy is going to be the year of expectations versus reality. So we still have this beautiful picture of gig economy, the story that has been given to us, where, you know, gig economy will enable anyone to do whatever they want whenever they want for a lot of money. The reality is that a lot of money is not usually the case. So we'll see how it goes, but for us, for individuals, we need to learn more about what gig economy is and be probably sometimes a bit more skeptical about the promises of the gig economy as well.
Yeah, interesting space. I'll move on to your third of your nine, which has to do what I think we're calling the proactive organisation. So I think the premise there is that value is created by predicting and meeting the needs of customers ahead of time.
That's true.
Yeah, how did that play out, or is it still playing out?
Oh yeah, so I'd like to say that a proactive organisation is one that is faster than its customers, and the whole point being, as a proactive organisation, you know what your customers might need simply because you have access to so much data about them, whether you're a retailer and you can predict purchasing trends, or you're a government. We work with the state government here, for instance, and based on the data you might have about your citizens, data that they willingly provide to you and allow you to process, you might be able to say, hey, citizen X, I know that you might need to apply for this license or that license because there's a particular business you're running, and we know you told us that you want to expand or whatever it is. So a proactive one, rather than waiting for someone to apply for those services, offers the services because they know it makes sense. Now, to your question, whether you know that trend is happening, yes, very much so. So over 2016, together with Queensland government, we've launched a number of such proactive services that are already available to citizens. But that's only what my team works on. And then when I look outside, I see organizations such as Amazon, for instance, selling you house appliances that can now proactively order, you know, replenishment products, right? So you can order a dishwasher that will order dishwashing liquid soon before it runs out of the current one. And this is already happening.
That sounds really appealing.
It also sounds creepy when
well,
you think
a little,
about
a little
it.
Creepy, but you know, as a woman, and I don't know if this is incredibly gender specific, but you just want someone in the household to be proactive.
Absolutely.
And if it's Amazon, I'm more than happy.
No, I'm fully with you, and I teased you a bit with the creepiness of it, simply because we are actually looking into how, as an organization, can you prevent that feeling of the creepiness, right?
Well, I guess when I was thinking and looking at this trend and to do with the government space, my favourite and funniest example is my brother recently turned 50, and the week even before he turned 50, he got his bowel cancer screening kit.
That's right.
From the government, who knew he was turning 50, and he was stunned by that. He thought, how do they know I'm turning 50?
So that's a surprise and delight.
I don't know about delight in that case.
That's a good point. Yes, definitely not a delightful experience.
Yeah, that's almost right. Welcome to old age. Here's your bowel cancer screening kit.
That's right. So what a government would normally do in such situation, and that's part of our research as well. They would inform the person saying, hey, because you are our citizen and perhaps we have your birth records on file, we have calculated that you are about to turn a certain age, and this is why we're sending that to you. The moment you have a message like that, the moment you understand, it's not creepy anymore. So
that's a really good point. Yes. And getting the feeling of surveillance away from what could be a really wonderful life enhancing thing.
That's
so
right.
I'll go to your fifth bet, which was the importance of sensing your environment to sort of not be blindsided by disruptive changes. So you're saying if the world around you moves faster than you do, the end is near. And you were giving examples. One example, I suppose, about the potential of high capacity batteries. So you know, whether the energy industry is going to be completely blindsided by that trend and our ability to maybe start distributing energy back into the grid. What's happening there?
That's right. And on the batteries, since then, we've seen a number of countries claiming that solar energy is now cheaper for them than coal, for instance. So that trend has definitely, and that was all about the case where I said that incumbents in industries will be challenged even more just because of that. And we're really seeing that more and more. So on sensing the environment, for me, we see a lot of executives, a lot of CEOs who sleep very well, who do not worry about the future of their businesses.
I see a lot of them. They also seem they're a little bit asleep at the wheel, I think.
That's right.
Hi, my students out there. I'm talking about you.
So we call it unconscious incompetence, or the fact that you don't know what you don't know, right? So you're asleep at the wheel in a way. Environmental sensing is all about making sure you do not miss something that might be happening around you. And it's very important to not only scan your industry, right? So not only look for new business models, technology trends, or even social trends within your industry or within the business area that you're in, but also go way beyond it, way past just your industry. Sometimes when I talk to university executives, I say, look, Virgin Airlines could disrupt QUT, and you know, initially the reaction was, what are you talking about, Mark, right? It doesn't make sense.
I don't think I'd like the uniform very much.
Yeah, that's there's a few things that we probably wouldn't like to have here, but at the same time, this is all about trying to understand what customers you have and why they come to you, right? So some MBA students might join a university not to learn but to build a network. And a lot of them would do it. My brother finished his MBA. His only goal was to build his network. So there are different reasons why people choose a particular service provider. Now, back to Virgin Airlines, they are in a business of often flying important people from point A to point B. They know who those people are through frequent flyer programs, and they could start offering a networking service where, you know, right now Virgin Airlines sells me an exit row seat for, I don't know, $25. Maybe next year they could start offering a CEO row seat. Hey, Marek, would you like to sit next to a CEO?
Interesting.
So without proper environmental scan, without having, you know, your eyes effectively around your head and like a radar continuously scanning the environment, looking at other industries and so on, it's going to be very hard to notice that. What makes it relatively easy is what I just explained, which is understanding why customers come to us and not being focused on a product or a service, and then trying to think what other industries are offering a service that could fulfill the same need. I was just having a discussion with professionals from health industry, And I was telling them about urban utilities. In fact, those two industries, so utilities and health, have a very similar goal, which is ensuring health and well-being of their customers. From that perspective, suddenly a water utility could become a competition to a hospital or a GP, and the other way around, right? And we don't have too much time to delve into details, but I'm just going to leave.
You don't know where it's going to the disruption's going to come from. It may not come from the obvious suspects.
That's right. And I'm going to leave our listeners with just a name of a project, which is called Diagnostic Toilet, which sort of shows you where the overlap might be.
And that's I think a QUT relevant example.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah. I will just go to the last of your nine bets, which is that digital intelligence is the new black. So you say that we'll move from digital literacy through digital behavior to digital elegance.
Yeah.
And your recommendation is that we should all invest in digital literacy and development. So our business is really getting behind that idea.
Yes. Now I need to comment on this prediction. So it was my prediction that in 2016 we would move a bit higher up. I was absolutely wrong. I have to admit that. That's two of the nine predictions that I had in this article. I think I was wrong, and that's one of the predictions that I was wrong.
Wrong in what way?
As in, I think we're just as bad, just as stupid as we digitally stupid as we used to be. In 2015 we had the big case of Ashley Madison, where we should have learned that we shouldn't be using government or corporate email addresses.
Yes, that was quite stunning, wasn't
it? That's right, but nothing changed. Adult Friend Finder in 2016 was exactly the same case. A few years ago, we had a very creepy, in a way, case of baby monitors, internet-connected baby monitors, where hackers could hack into them and watch babies, basically. And there were web pages where, you know, where you could see all the webcams or all the cams. Same story in 2016. Now, I'm using, you know, very much individual examples or examples of not for organizations, but for me, but for, you know, the cases where individuals would make mistakes, but it's the same that is happening with organizations. It seems like we keep learning the same lessons or keep trying to learn the same lessons. It's just nothing stays in our heads or in our organizational
memories. Suppose if we we say about Exec Insights, it's about Australian business and the changing world, although we do take a broader view. So is Australia, are we hunting in the pack in terms of digital, or how would we rate in terms of digital literacy, digital uptake, adaptation to digital trends? How are we going?
There are pockets that are very, very advanced, and especially, you know, just if you think about digital evolution in general, there are pockets of big cities that you would compare in terms of digital literacy to, you know, to the top spots in the world. And at the same time, there is a digital divide, right? So if we are running in a pack, then it's a very, very long pack, right? So there's probably, you know, a few wolves at the beginning, but there's quite a few laggards there as well, which basically means, and you know, everything that I told you about this particular prediction, it's immensely important that we focus on education, on educating ourselves, or on educating others. So whether we might be ahead of the pack, it's important that we as individuals, we as organizations also help the others. And it's also our role as a university here to make sure that organizations and individuals understand the importance of digital literacy, digital behavior, and the digital elegance, as I call it, on top of the pyramid.
So we all need to do our bit. Business
That's
schools
right.
and in faculties of science and technology, we all try. Thanks for that. Which is where we go to our final piece, where we learn a little bit more about the individual, and we call this segment That's Interesting. So, Marek, have you read something or listened to something recently that made you just stop and think, Generally, I think of it as stopping thinking, things are definitely changing.
Absolutely, absolutely. I try to read a lot, in fact, and I love, you know, I love your occasional Bryson. I just finished reading At Home, which is his wonderful book where he goes through various rooms in a house.
Oh, yes, I know that one. Yeah.
And explains the history of each room. The book inspired me to think about the future. So that's a question that I often ask myself when I read something. You know, what's next? So my next question was, what is the room of the future? You know, we didn't used to have a study room in our houses 50 years ago. Now we have a study room. What is the room that we're going to have in 50 years from now, and or maybe 20 years from now? My bet at the moment is that we're going to have a retail room, which is a room you'll go shopping to. Think about an evolution of a hotel minibar where you have a fridge in every room and you can just grab something, and in some more advanced hotels you would be automatically charged when you grab that bottle or a snack. Think about, rather than going to a supermarket, allowing supermarkets to put the products on shelves inside your house, inside your room, and you only pay when you grab those items. Now, with all the big data, with all the information that retailers might have about us, they might actually be pretty accurate at restocking our shelves and ensuring that what is there
is the wine that we like.
And that's right. Yes, yeah. So it could be viable, because I know what some listeners might be thinking, like, you know, what if only 5% of the products from the shelves get grabbed? Fair question, but I believe that with the advances in data analytics, we will see much more focused, much more accurate predictions here. Now, the digital room, I gave you an example of a very physical interaction with shelves. Maybe you would have a cupboard where you would have clothes and so on. But it could also be a purely virtual experience. Maybe, you know, you enter a room and it's like a holodeck, right? You get to touch virtual items, and then within 1 hour they get delivered to your physical room.
That
right?
Does sound like a good bet.
So that's, you know, that's definitely an option. I do think that while online shopping is a great idea, I think a window of a mobile phone or even a computer is just too small to have this nice experience of shopping. So shopping is not only about restocking, it's also about experience. So I wrote a book about a home, and then I started thinking about digital economy.
It's all digital for you, Mark.
Here's how it works in
here's
my head.
Here's how it works. Yes. Well, watch this space. Yeah. Well, thanks, Marek. That's been
really
instructive.
It was a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Exec Insights. For more information about QUT's executive education programs, please search QUT Executive Education and you'll find a full range of our programs and services.